Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Sir, it's never the underdog.
Yes, sir.
It's never the underdog.
Yes, sir.
Final four now.
What's up, Duke fans? Welcome to the Devil's Den podcast. I'm your host, Josh Smith, joined by my co-host, Raul and Shu. This is a little off-cuff here tonight. We're going to do something a little bit different. Started thinking after the big football win over Clemson about upsets and comebacks. And, you know, Duke basketball is in a different kind of state of mind right now where it's pretty difficult at this point for us to get an upset like that. Obviously, there's one or two on this list that I think qualify, but really, we're looking at some comebacks here. So just, you know, shouts to Duke football. Huge win. Coach Elko, you know, if you didn't get a chance already, we did a podcast with Adam Rowe and Bud Elliott kind of previewing the schedule for the football team, if you follow that. So check that out. But this will be a little bit more of a fun one. So we'll kind of go through, I guess, you know, in order. Why not? Kind of a stroll down history lane here. So I made the list, I sent it to you guys. So I'll introduce the first one here, and this, you know, y'all can jump in and correct me, but this might be the only one that really qualifies as an upset probably, right? I think even at the time it was probably considered like one of the biggest upsets. If that doesn't kind of alert you here, we're talking Duke UNLV 1991. So I'll set the stage and y'all jump in and we'll talk about it a little bit. 1990 UNLV steamrolls Duke by 30 in the national championship game. Hate to kind of hold that record there. Comes back a year later, 91. We're meeting in the Final Four, which, you know, and you get to the Final Four. How big of an upset is that? Well, a little bit of context, though. I mean, UNLV comes in undefeated. They've been beating teams by about 30. I think for the most part, you know, it was probably considered that the same thing was going to happen. Not to age us too much here, but like I was literally about 2 years old at that point. So Raul, Shu, do y'all remember any kind of hype? Were y'all like aware of Duke basketball kind of like at that level at that time? Or what is your kind of memory of this game, if at all?
I guess I'll go first. So I probably would have been 10 going on 11. So I was definitely conscious of Duke basketball and already watching. That was an April, and I think it was over like spring break or something, because my family was on a road trip and I got into the room just in time to see UNLV miss that final shot. The weird thing is I don't remember thinking, I guess I just wasn't at the age where I was aware of point spreads and stuff like that, but I don't remember thinking it was this impossible accomplishment. Of course, I knew what had happened the year before, but you know, since then, of course, I've gone back and watched the game. And, you know, that's all the announcers are talking about. And you just, like, what jumps out to you is how huge UNLV is. Just, like, at every single position, they look like NBA players.
Yeah. Yeah. Watching a lot of old games are like that, right? Like, you're literally seeing grown men out there, you know? And I think maybe the athleticism or whatever, but just, like, you're just seeing dudes out there. Shoot, were you kind of, like, in the loop at that point? Or kind of what was your kind of, where were you at with things?
Yeah, I mean, I was 7 or 8 at the time. So, you know, it wasn't like I knew where everybody that played at Duke was from and, you know, what we have now. But just aware of basketball in general at that point, I was starting to play basketball. The biggest thing I remember is that year, Carolina was also in the Final Four. So it was a big thing, like us talking about it at school, like as kids, thinking about what that matchup would have been like. But first, obviously, Duke had to get by UNLV, which was kind of like a, I don't know, like a trendy thing, like the Fab Five before those guys, right? Like you'd see kids over here wearing Running Rebels shirts and whatnot. It was just a, you know, a cool, popular thing. Sure. So, yeah, just and remember, you know, had watched the year before with my buddy Jason, who was a shout out to Jason Honeycutt, the Duke fans that kind of brought me into the fold. His dad was my basketball coach and one of the biggest Duke fans I've ever known. And nice. So we watched us get crushed the year before, and then the inevitable happens the next year.
It's hard to have context too now, right? Like, I mean, you take away 5 national championships, you got to go back to a program that's just like still on the door knocking, you know? And I think I went and pulled some like really old, or I tried to pull some like old, just like headlines and articles like of what was going on. And, you know, it's all like, can Coach K, you know, finally get to the promised land, right? Or can he deliver? You know, is can Duke finally get this done? And it's just really weird seeing that right now, knowing what you do 30 some years later.
Yeah, there was this narrative that like Coach K couldn't win it all, right?
Couldn't win the big one. Yeah.
That he was the best coach in college basketball. People had already kind of agreed on that, you know, just with the success they'd had over the last like 4 or 5 years. But there was this kind of black mark on his resume.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, what a cool moment to get that done. And I think, and we won't give it away too much because there's some other ones on this list that involve big time shots, but I'm pretty sure Coach K always references the Hurley made 3 as arguably the biggest shot in Duke history. Y'all agree with that?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Yeah. I mean, what Duke was down 5 at the time, that cut it to 2. Mm-hmm. The game was slipping away from them after they'd been kind of playing them even all game. So that was the point where Duke just could have folded.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to argue. You know, I lean a little bit towards the shot that Leitner hit the next year, but I guess you can make the counter of like, well, if Hurley doesn't hit this one, does Leitner ever get a chance to even do that? You know, we had made 5 out of 6 Final Fours at that point. So it's like, we probably could have still been there, but I get the significance of what that does. But the Leitner one, you know, that was dynasty at that point, right? So it's, you know, shouts to the squad.
Right, yeah. Part of the significance of the Leitner shot is that it allowed Duke to go back-to-back. And obviously, if you don't win in 91, that's not happening. Duke's still trying to break through.
That's true.
You know, and who knows, like maybe the, I don't know, you know, it's just one of those butterfly effect things too.
Yeah.
It's like, is the seating completely different? Do they have as much motivation and drive? Right. I don't know, you know, whatever. But
we can give Leitner the aesthetic award because his looks the best, right? Yeah, sounds the coolest, the 10 for 10, 10 for 10, completely perfect game. It's literally, I've almost, not to sidetrack us too much and we'll move on, but it's kind of weird that we haven't seen like a really well-made movie about just like that team or that shot, right? Like that's got like Hoosiers, Glory Road, insert whatever you want, all written all over it. It's kind of wild we haven't got that, but
we got a 30 for 30 at least.
That's true. We'll jump ahead a few years and just more context. I just kind of pulled some of the ones that were jumping out to me. I didn't go through and scour everyone, so you know, listeners, y'all might hear something or think of, why don't you include this? You know, hit us up. You know, maybe we missed something that we weren't aware of. But I'm going to jump forward a few years to really my indoctrination. You know, I have pictures in 91 and 92 in a Duke onesie, my dad and grandpa, but really being conscious and like a fan. Let's jump to 1998. Duke, Carolina, senior night, Wojo with the big hug, right? That's the moment that everyone really recognizes here. Carolina was really kind of after us leading here. Dean Smith took it to us. Like, he took it to the shed to us those last couple of years before he got out. This was a pretty big game. I think this might be the last time we stormed the court. Have to check that, but I'm pretty sure we stormed the court after this game. So Duke's number one, UNC's number three entering the game, which sounds really weird here. Huge night, huge moment, huge comeback. Shu, I'll go to you first on this one. What do you remember most about this game, or do you really have a working memory of it?
The Wojo hug obviously sticks out the most.
For sure.
Because I was a huge Wojo guy. You know, I'm again, middle school, I'm the kid slapping the floor on defense, even though I couldn't guard a statue. You normally guys just blew right by me as I did it. But yeah, I mean, just, you know, and like you said, at that time, Carolina had been kind of, we had our stretch of all those Final Fours, you know, that kind of ended in 94. And Carolina had been to another Final Four or two in that span since we've been. So my biggest thing, again, it always goes back to like in the 90s in North Carolina growing up, at least at my middle school, and I'm sure most of them, rural North Carolina, that's 95% Carolina fans. So, you know, again, just me and my buddy Jason, the only two Duke fans, and all these Carolina fans are you know, yapping at us all the time. So to get that win in front of Coach K's, be Coach K's 500th win, and the way they came back was just, that's what I remember, being able to come into school, you know, the next day, kind of chest out with your sweet Duke starter jacket or whatever you got rolling in with.
Yeah, for sure. Ro, do you have a pretty strong memory of this, or you were probably like, I don't know, as teenage Ro checked out at that point or what?
Yeah, I was engaged in other activities maybe, but
yeah.
No, I mean, I watched it, and of course I've watched it a lot since then, on the grainy YouTube footage and stuff you can find. But I think the context is like 95 through 97. Shu already kind of hinted at this, but those were the dark years, right, of Duke basketball. And Duke was just starting to get back to dominance in 98, and they'd been a really good team that year. In fact, I think they finished in the ACC 15-1, but... Yeah. They had been beaten by UNC pretty badly in the first matchup. And Elton Brand had been out for most of the season, or at least most of the ACC schedule. I can't remember exactly when he got injured, but
he broke his foot or something, right?
Like, maybe you guys will remember when exactly that happened. But was that Carolina game his first game back, or had he come back a game before or something? Do you know?
I don't remember.
It had to have been close. Yeah, it had to have been close right there, because he had a really good game. This game made me fall in love with Will Avery, though. That was like one of my early guys. You know, a really big Will fan. I got a question though too. Looking at some of the notes that y'all put down, so it's a 17-point comeback. We're down 17 in the second half. Is there some kind of foreboding here? Because the script kind of get flipped on us there in the tournament, like. That's a little weird, I guess, but either way, huge win.
It was a defensive clinic, really. I mean, we only allowed them to score 11 points over the next 11 minutes.
Right, right. I remember that.
And Carwell was just like a two-way, you know, that what Josh loves, that two-way wing, hitting shots and just locking people down. And then we kind of got, I won't say we got lucky, but, you know, Kota misses a free throw. He's forced to intentionally miss the second one. And I think it was Brendan Haywood got the rebound, gets fouled, misses his first free throw. So then he has to intentionally miss the second one again. And it just kind of got batted around. And then, you know, the buzzer expires. So we were able to hang on. But yeah, I mean, just being down and being able to turn on that Duke defense in the last couple of minutes, that's what I remember the most, is just like locking them down.
It's one of my first memories too, of just like, not that you come to expect it, but you start to like, don't count us out, right? Like we've made some crazy runs, you know, and I guess that's a decent segue of maybe arguably one of the craziest runs we've ever made. If we jump forward a couple of years and look at Duke Maryland 01, and I think pretty much most people listening to this are probably pretty aware. It's the Miracle Minute, it's the Natty team. Maryland was really good, really good. I mean, when I was in middle school, Maryland had kind of semi surpassed Carolina in terms of like the team that I hated the most, who was like our threat in the ACC. Duke Maryland was just some class. I mean, you had Gary Williams on the sidelines. I mean, they go on to win it the next year. So the stage is there. I remember like sitting there as a kid, staying up, talking on the phone with one of my buddies that was an NC State fan when this was happening. just a wild kind of thing here. So before we kind of jump in too much, Ro, I'll go to you this time first. Were you watching this game live? Do you have any kind of like real recollection of it?
Yeah, I was. But oddly, the thing I remember the most was my roommate in college was a Maryland fan. He was kind of like secondary Duke fan, but primarily a Maryland fan because he had grown up in that area. And he was at that game. So he came back to our apartment, like, I guess probably the next day or something, just like still fuming. So that's my main memory of that game. But obviously, I did watch it at the time. And it was like, I remember being very frustrated because Steve Blake always just owned Jason Williams. Like nobody guarded him as well for whatever reason. And I believe, did Blake foul out near the end of that game?
Yeah, okay, so that's 2 minutes left.
So there you go. And then Jason Williams goes off.
Yeah. Yeah, who had not been playing well at all prior to that.
Blake had a sneaky, like, long wingspan. You know, and was just kind of able to at least stay in front of Jay Will for the most part. And then even if you got around him, you could kind of do, like, a little reach around to pop the ball away. And then you also had, you know, Juan Dixon, like, kind of scouting. They were kind of double teaming, not double teaming, but at least you would have Juan like kind of dig down and help off. So yeah, those teams. I mean, talk about those were good Maryland teams, really good, probably the best they've ever had. Obviously, they're
the only championship team
for them. Yeah,
that 2 year run they had. I mean, just for added context here, you know, Maryland's up 12 with a minute 5. Left.
Yep.
Like probability at that point's got to be at least 97-98% in Maryland's favor. And the wheels just completely come off. And that final kind of it's almost weird watching it or going back and look, because the one thing that I had forgotten about was that it went to overtime. Like in my head, I'm just like, oh, we just pulled this miraculous comeback off and we just win. But it actually goes to overtime and we win. But if we look at it and we run it down, so a minute 5 left, down 12, you get the following sequence of Nate James hitting a 3, Jay Will gets a layup, and then he gets that little kind of steal right there in front of the bench where he pulls up, drains another 3. At that point is when I think I started to kind of like get up out of my seat a little bit, right? Where I was like, ooh, this is kind of spicy now, right? Like they got to miss some free throws. Some things have got to happen. Jay Will starts to heat up and then he comes off that high ball screen and just drills a 3. I mean, and I think I want to say Shane Battier had a quote at some point where he was talking about that, where he was telling him, he was like, look, when you pull off, if they sag, you better shoot that ball. Like you better shoot. I'll deal with it if you miss it, but you better shoot the damn ball. And he just drains it. And then we get a big, big Nate James tip in there, makes the free throws, gets it on the foul. And we go to overtime. And I think the lasting thing is, who was it? Was it Juan in the corner that tries to throw up that heave? Betty is right there. He misses it, clangs off, and then we kind of just go and win. Just a huge, huge game. And the funny thing is, too, is y'all probably heard this in like some of the documentaries or some of the stuff. They were pretty adamant that they were telling each other, like, look, we're not going to celebrate, right? Like, Shane was like, I don't want y'all celebrating. Like, we came in here, we kind of celebrated a little bit. Like, when I watched the thing, I was like, Duhon and Jay Will, they're kind of feeling themselves a little bit. But either way, you know, I think that was just, I don't know if I've seen much like that. There's been a few other college basketball games with some crazy comebacks recently. But in terms of Duke War, I think that's probably got to be up in the top 3. It's just a minor spoiler, I guess. Is that where y'all kind of have this, somewhere in your top 3 or 4?
Definitely.
If not,
I mean,
one.
Coldfield House. I mean, you know, that place was, it was a jungle to go into, especially around that time. And like you guys pointed out, after, you know, Steve Blake had been really tough on Jay Will, and he fouls out and Drew Nichols comes in, he's a freshman, and we just kind of smell blood from that point. Like, you know, we're going to take it at this kid. That's who we ripped it away from. to get that steal and then step into a three-pointer. And Drew Nichols, I believe, missed some free throw, like key free throws there down the stretch too before we tied it up the end regulation.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, if we're going to talk about the other Maryland game this year, so we might as well kind of lump these together a little bit. What's more impressive, or like, what do you think like has to go right more, I guess, like to go from down 12 to tying it up in a minute and five, or to be down, or to have like a 33 point swing across, I think it was 28 or so minutes. Which one do you, I'm curious here, Merle, I'll go to you first. Which one do you think is the hardest to pull off, or you have to have more things go right for you?
I think that the, 12 point comeback in a minute, just because you're so crunched for time. Like you said, the other one was stretched out over like three quarters of the game. So it was really just Maryland dominating Duke for the first 12 minutes or whatever it was. And then Duke kind of waking up or whatever. But I will say that Final Four game obviously has more historical importance in context, simply because it's the Final Four. Duke goes on to win the national championship.
Yeah, third time that year we'd come back against those boys too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just the way that game was, like you guys said, they kind of jumped on us early on, and then pretty much at halftime, Kay's like, all right, you know, no more plays. We're not running plays. You just rolled the ball out essentially. You guys go out and kind of feel it and do what you need to do. And then the other big switch that he made was he put Nate James on Juan Dixon, who I think Nate held him to maybe 2 points while he was guarding him. I think he finished with 19. He had 16 at that point, only three in the second half, so he finished with 19. And that was a lot to do with Nate. And, you know, Nate, you guys know, Nate's a Maryland guy. So he's talked about how, you know, that rivalry was really big for him personally. And he was huge, obviously, in the win in the Miracle Minute, but he was equally as huge in the Final Four win.
Was it just him? Kinda,
he had the big tip in that
right, Final Four game. Right, that's what I was going to mention. Yep. Yeah, so it was because they played Maryland four times that year, correct? Because they played them in the ACC tournament. So Duke went 3-1 against them, I think, because the senior night loss was the kind of lone loss they had to them, which kind of sucks, but.
Yeah, but I'll take the losers. Other three. Yeah. I'll take those other three. Well, for sake of time, I guess we can jump forward here. Now, this is probably a pretty big jump. I was trying to see if I could pull anything from those mid 2000 teams, but that's like kind of my dark period a little bit, right? It's like high school and like early college stuff. So like while I'm following the team, I'm not probably doing it quite with the same eye that I am now. Or was before then. So we're going to go all the way up 10 years to 2011. This was a huge one, though, and I remember this one pretty vividly. This is Duke Carolina at Duke. What was the halftime score? Were they up 14?
Yeah, 43 to 29 is what it says there.
Yeah, and this is the year that, infamously, Kyrie Togate happens, right? Like we come out the gate on fire. Nolan's making his case tonight for, ACC player of the year, even national player of the year. If the Jimmer wasn't there, Nolan's probably got a heck of a shot at that. And so we're coming in. UNC's kind of on a surge here a little bit. So, they got Kendall Marshall. This is a team that the following year would be a Final Four team, right? Or they would have, I guess, Kendall broke the hand or something and Kansas beat them.
They lost in the Elite Eight, but looked like they were headed to the title game.
They were pretty dominant. So they come in, just pretty much waxed us the first half. I mean, we were just dead in the water. Maybe one of the loudest, like on TV, like I could sense the loudness in Cameron in that game in the second half. I'll hand it off to y'all here in a second, but I remember at a point, I remember when Kelly hits that three and you just see Kyrie going nuts, the whole place going nuts. But I think the biggest one might have been Nolan gets a steal and comes through and gets like an and one, and he just starts kind of pointing and dancing. That's one of my favorite Duke memories there. Do y'all have a pretty good memory of this one? I remember this one pretty clearly. Shu, where were you at? Were you still up in Boone at this point? Because I was up there watching it.
I was back. I'd back off the mountain at that point. Yeah, I think I might have actually been watching this with Brent Miller, who you guys know from the page. So shout out to B Miller. But 2011, yeah, this was the game that Curry went off in the second half too, right? Is that this one? Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Curry and Nolan. Oak Street with Caleb. Obviously, you know Caleb. Shouts to Caleb. But
yeah, Curry and Nolan went crazy in the second half.
Yeah. Yeah, Curry was awesome. You had 22. Singler, not the best, right? It really kind of sucks that Kyle had that, that knee scope or whatever right before his senior year, man. I think he had the 30 against Oregon or something like that, and the kind of show me game, and that was kind of the highlight there. Raul, do you remember this game? Does this one stand out to you at all, or is it just kind of another one of the put it in the wacky comebacks against Carolina that we had there for about 10 years?
Yeah, that was this kind of the first of those big comebacks? Probably.
Yeah, it happened a lot though after this.
It started the trend though, I feel like it. Obviously the first one is 98, but but from 2011 to basically now, there's been seven or eight comebacks against UNC. Yeah. So I think this was kind of was the start of that trend for whatever reason. I don't remember much. I just remember almost all the scoring in that second half was Nolan and Seth. You know, Kay would always do this when Duke got down against Carolina. He would just lean into the guard play and he would just drive the ball at them over and over and, have the guards coming off screens and all that stuff. And he'd always kind of, I don't think he went small in this game, but that was another tactic of his, was just to go small and bomb threes. But in this game, I just remember, Seth coming off a billion ball screens.
Yeah.
Well, one of the reasons this was the start of our kind of comebacks against Coke. For years there before that, we were, not 2010. There was no comebacks. We just dominated those. But before the couple years before that, we weren't really coming back to win against Carolina a whole lot, unfortunately. There was the game that JJ sniffed out that last play. That's the only one I wouldn't.
Maybe it's a Roy Williams thing is what it is. Right? Yeah. Maybe that's the, cause 2004, his first year, you got to do not so much comebacks all the time, but we just seem to find a way to squeak out wins against them. Right. You start with Duhon. I think 2005 is the one you're talking about. We beat him by one and Cameron on the defensive stop.
That one might've been in Chapel Hill.
What?
The defensive stop.
No, that's in Cameron.
Yeah, that's in Cameron.
Yeah, okay. JJ blows the play up on the baseline.
I believe in 06, JJ has a big game
35 in the dome.
In Chapel Hill, yeah.
Yeah, just roasted those boys.
But then 7 through 9 was not great.
Right.
Obviously, those are the kind of the Hansborough years, and Duke just doesn't kind of have the talent to compete with them at that point.
I will say 08 at Carolina is still really fun to watch, but the team in general is it didn't end very well, but I think we just go in and Paulus just goes off. We hit 13 threes.
But it was a little less satisfying because Lawson was out, and Lawson was the guy who would always dominate.
Yeah. Yeah. As evidenced in 09 when they just waxed us. Mm. But, Duke UNC 2011, really fun team. Really sucks that one didn't get to see that one fully healthy. Had a chance there to do something, but we got a guy drafted, I guess, so he made his money in the end. But all right, let's take a little quick break here and then we'll come back and we'll start again at Duke UNC 2012. So let's take five.
Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
All right, let's jump back in. Not too big of a jump this time. We're just going 1 year down the road. Another one that's probably ingrained in everyone's memory. You're going to see it at every Duke Carolina game. They're going to show the highlights. We're going to the Dean Dome. The year is 2012, and I'm talking Austin Rivers. So Carolina comes in ranked 5. We talked about it in the year prior. This is when Carolina really looked like a juggernaut at a certain point. Duke had been kind of up and down all year, but spoiler alert, that team did go undefeated on the road. So, yeah. You know, shouts to 2012 for that. They were the road warriors. We probably all have a really strong working memory of this. I remember being at a bar with a buddy of mine, one being a Carolina fan, shouts David Hansen, the other one being a Duke fan, shouts to D. Lofton. Pretty wild finish there, especially out in a public venue, as you could imagine. So again, the magic number is 10 with about 2.5 minutes left. I'll tip it off there. Raul, do you remember what do you remember besides the finale of those last couple minutes or anything about the game in general?
I remember it being really frustrating because Duke played really well in the first half.
Threes.
Hit a ton of threes. It was clearly the right strategy. I mean, Duke was the underdog in this game, I think it's a 6-point dog. So it was a good strategy to come in because we had the shooters to just come in and just bomb threes. And I believe Duke was up by like 8 or something in the first half at one point. And then UNC kind of closes the gap at the end of the half. And then in the second half, Harrison Barnes started playing really well, which was, of course, you know, a source of frustration for us Duke fans. Because at the time, there was no UNC player that you hated more just because of the kind of the history of the recruitment and all that. So that's the main thing that I remember. And just the feeling that the game was slipping away from them. And then just this insane sequence of events. You know, I could go into like every play because they're all etched in my memory. I don't remember the exact order, but how many little things had to go right for Duke to end up winning.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that first half too, because I can remember feeling like, uh-oh, and we're up 8, like you said, right? But it felt like, man, we just played our ass. Like, I don't know if we can play any better. Like, I don't know if we can shoot better. Like, we needed to be up 20 after a performance like that. It didn't take long for them to right the ship. Shu, what about you? The final couple minutes are just from that game. Does it still fresh for you?
Oh, I mean, this one I 100% remember. I was watching with B. Miller and our buddy Jake Bird. Lana's there. So obviously my wife is a Carolina fan. Brent's wife is a Carolina fan as well. So the Carolina girls, they were all, you know, feeling good about themselves the last 2 minutes. I remember looking at the guys, like, we're going to win this game. Like, kind of the Coach K, you know, the Grant Hill and Leighton are like, we're not losing this one. You know, the Kentucky talk. So, and then it all started to happen. I remember after Austin hit that shot, all three of us are like jumping, hugging, jumping on the floor. Brent kind of lives out in the cut a little bit. So as I'm leaving his house later that night, I didn't have any signal out there. All of a sudden my phone, just like text messages went off. I think I had like 80 text messages that popped up instantly as soon as I get some signal. But yeah, that's one I don't think I'll ever forget. That night was that was fun. That was special.
Yeah, that was I think at the time it was euphoric, but I think it still holds. It's just like that shot, that moment. And so much went right. You know, you had the Mason gets the steal, Curry hits the walking three, Tyler kind of hits the little like jab step, ends up shooting the three, Zeller helps us out, all the good stuff. I think my favorite part about it though is Harrison Barnes picks up a charge with like 16 seconds left on the shot clock that, like, if they just don't shoot the ball and stop giving it to us, they probably win the game.
How many times do you think Carolina calls themselves by either not calling a timeout and like regrouping or something like you said, just kind of shooting yourself in the foot?
A lot, dude. There's been a lot of times, like not so much recently, but like during the 2010 to like 18 or 19 or whatever, I was telling people all the time, like, you hate watching Duke play stall ball, but watch Carolina not play it sometimes. And if they just learned how to stall, they could win some of these games.
Yeah.
They played at the pace, and that's just the way that they do it. But thankful to pull that one out. You know, they smashed us in Cameron that year to make up for it. So it's kind of, you know, but at least
That was a championship caliber Carolina team.
Yep. Oh, for sure. Year. They'll tell you that they should have won it. You know, I still think Kentucky would have beat them again, but
yeah.
You know, it could happen. It could have happened, sure. Right? Like, yeah. Why not? All right, let's stay with this team. Kind of, it's kind of weird. Maybe just have two games from the 2012 team, but they just kind of what they did at this point. This one is one of my favorite ones, and it's hard to find it to watch. But that if you watch the comeback in this one, it's crazy because they're down 20 to State in Cameron in the second half with like 11 minutes to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I think from that point, we go on like a 20-3 run, 13-0 run in there. Yep. Seth Curry has just lost his mind. Raul, do you remember much about that other than just Rivers and Curry just looking at each other and saying like, yo, take turns?
Yeah, for whatever reason, this is like one of my favorite comebacks. I don't know why. Maybe it's just because I haven't watched it in so many years that it's kind of like sweeter in my memory than it actually was. But obviously, Duke should not have been down 20 to NC State in the first place. I mean, Duke was not like ultra dominant, but it was a decent enough team. You know, they finished as a 2 seed. NC State that year was like an okay team. Did they even make the tournament? If they did, it was like as a lower seed.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, Duke was a fairly heavy favorite heading into this game. So to be down 20 in the first half was just like a very unexpected result. And then, yeah, again, my memory is just like that 2011 game where I just remember Seth Curry coming off ball screen after ball screen. But even more so in this game than that one, because it wasn't like Nolan chipping in as well, obviously, because he wasn't there anymore. I think Rivers made a few big shots too. And then maybe Kelly had a nice shot too, but it was really mostly Seth.
Yeah, that tracks too from what I remember. I mean, he has 21 in the second half, yeah. Right? So, I mean, he's going off. I do like that Rivers quote though, where, and I'm a big Rivers fan anyway. I've always kind of thought that he kind of got, you know, shafted a little bit for how that team finished. But he wore it on his sleeve, man. I remember when Florida State beat us at the buzzer and you just see him just crushed there, right? Yep. Like just so many times, you know, I love a guy like that. But yeah, that season didn't turn out quite as well as we had hoped. But let's jump to one that did. Let's go to 2015. Such a fun season. Such a good season. This is probably one of my absolute favorite games to rewatch. I have this game on DVD. I watch it. Duke at Virginia 2015. I don't think a lot of people remember how good Virginia was, just because this is when they had started to get that like mantra of like, okay, you're going to go through the ACC, but you're never going to do anything. And so people just kind of slept on it. They're number one in the country, and I want to say they're undefeated heading into this game. Might have to double check that, but I want to say that they were undefeated. Maybe they had lost once or something like that, but it's a slog fest, right? But I think the one thing that stands out to me here, and then Shu, I'll go to you, is that we were super intentional about trying to get out and run whenever we could. Like Winslow was a madman. I remember Cook just kind of breaking free. Obviously the final few minutes there. What do you take away, or what do you remember, if anything, about this game, Shu?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, that's kind of, you don't want to give them time to set up their defense, you know, and play that kind of sluggish half-court offense. So if anytime you can push the pace and score in transition, you want to get out and do it. But, you know, I remember we didn't shoot the ball very well to start the game. But despite that, we were able to still kind of hang around. So we actually started 0-for-9 from three. But then we kind of just finished the end there with a flurry, finishing 6-of-8 in the final minutes. I think the biggest thing I remember about this game was that after Tyus rose up and hits that three over Perinez, you see Emil on the sideline just going, crazy. Yeah.
And giving them
giving them the marbles. Yeah. So it's like one of my favorite reactions from a sideline is that, and one that I'm sure we'll get to here in a couple minutes. But yeah, I definitely just remember. I mean, that Virginia team was Perinez and what was the Anderson, the left-handed kid? Anderson.
Yeah, it was Justin Anderson. I mean, they had Malcolm Brogdon.
That was a solid squad.
You had Nolte, who ended up being, pretty solid.
They were the number two defense that year. And the only reason they were number two, because it's actually a historically good defense, but the only reason they were number two is because it happened to be the same year that UK posted the best defensive rating ever.
Mm. Oh, yeah, that was the undefeated UK. Yeah.
So, dominant defense. Just an okay offense, but really good team. There's so many iconic little celebrations. Obviously, you mentioned Emil's, but there's the Justice Winslow crouch and stare. And then there's the Quinn Cook self butt slap.
Yeah,
you know what I'm talking about.
Riding the flow.
Yeah, so many good And that 2015 was notorious for this in general, but they were just so aesthetically pleasing to watch too. Like that pocket pass that Tyus finds Winslow where he just feeds it to him. Cook has one of his wraparound dumps to Okafor for a dunk in that one too. So many threes. I used to know, because I remember me and you talking about it right when it happened, our points per possession the last 2 minutes or something of the game was just at the most astronomical rate ever.
It was 1.6 points per possession or something crazy against the number two defense.
Well, we hit two threes there right now.
Cook hits two, Cook hit, Tyus Cook, hits yeah. one or two, yep. Matt hits one or two,
right?
And it was all in that little stretch, right? So Cook actually hits three.
It's three because it's 63-63, and then Cook hits 1-2, and then Tyus hits that.
Tyus hits the one, the Stones. The Stones was born there, right? That's the birth of Stones, probably.
The birth of Stones would have been at Wisconsin, right? Didn't he hit a big one at Wisconsin?
Yeah, but we just kind of rolled Wisconsin, by 10, right? So it's kind of he did hit some though, but they were daring him to shoot at Wisconsin, right? They were wanting him to shoot.
The only other time I can remember Duke eviscerating a top ranked defense like that was Coach K's last year against Texas Tech in the tournament.
Yeah.
That's the only other time where it was just you just posted 1.6 points per possession against the best defense.
Yeah.
Somehow, after kind of struggling to score the rest of the game, suddenly you just explode for 3 minutes.
That's probably right in terms of, how many chances do you get at playing at that level of defense? But I guess 2019, Virginia was probably up there defensively
And
when RJ just goes 5-for-5 from three in the first half or something crazy.
Yeah, that game won't make it on here because that was just a beatdown.
Curious to what Texas's defense was ranked that year that we were one and they were two.
Oh, yeah. And because, we hung a 30-piece in the Meadowlands.
Barnes always said
that was Barnes. So I don't imagine it being they were an off-the-wall, offensive team, but maybe not, maybe.
Yeah, no, I'm looking here. It was 15th, so solid. Okay. Really good defense, but not
when they started the year, it could have been. If you remove a 30-point drubbing.
All right, exactly.
Maybe it goes up. But yeah, that was a big time win too. I guess we'll stick again with 2015 here. This one's not one of the more unexpected comebacks, I guess, right? Teams come down from 9-under or 9-down with 13 minutes to play, probably semi-regularly, I would imagine. I think what makes it though is the fact that it's the national championship game, right? And you're playing a team that we had already beat. That was super old. And we talked about historic defenses. Wisconsin had an historic offense at the time, in terms of just how efficient they were. And then we come in and we kind of looked like we were flat, right? We kind of looked flat and kind of dead in the water. I think everyone knows we talked about the birth of Stones. This is the birth of Grayson Allen, where he just comes in and just saves us. I remember this game incredibly well too. Y'all probably do as well. Raul, what, I guess in terms of like the actual comeback, like where was your headspace at down nine there? Like, were you still kind of like, no, we can do this? Or it's like, man, this was a good run, but these guys are too old. We're not beating them again.
I remember being somewhat worried, like, okay, this may be slipping away from them, but not to the extent that I would have been with another team. And the reason is because Duke had already had a few comebacks earlier that year. I don't think they made the list, but there's the comeback against UNC and Cameron with, you know, just a couple minutes left being down eight or whatever it was to force overtime and then eventually winning that. And then another one, which, you know, maybe should have made the list because it was Coach K's 1,000th win, but the St. John's game.
St. John's, yeah.
So we kind of seen Duke do that. I think even at Wake Forest on the road, they'd come back in the last couple minutes. So I had like a strange, I'm not going to sit here and say that I really expected them to win to the title, but like I had a strange feeling of confidence with that team all year. And I think it kind of started with Tyus.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
The only thing I want to say here, this is just to kind of pick on Raul, because I would love for to be able to go back into our Messenger thread. I'm sure that game is on there somewhere.
Oh,
just,
yeah.
Just to see what you two were talking about at that point, because I have a feeling it would be very optimistic.
Yeah. I mean, we watched the Final Four game together, Shu, and I was ready to walk out when we were down eight to Michigan State and was like, blew their doors off.
That was like 2 minutes into the game. Right? Yeah. You're like, it's over.
Yeah, and we go on like a 20-4 run after that or something.
Fortunately, I think there's no archive of that, because I was actually at a friend's house with his mom and dad. And fortunately for me, they're like really intense Duke fans too, because I'm sure I was cursing up a storm and stuff. But really good experience watching that game overall. I just remember going to the kitchen to grab another beer when we're down like nine and just like pounding the beer in front of my friend's parents. You know, obviously we're in our 30s by then, so it's not like a big deal. But coming back in, and then once Grayson had cut the lead, because he essentially cut the lead by himself.
Mm-hmm.
Once that happened and it was in like a possession, I was like, I just knew we were going to win at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I remember there was actually video of this because I was at Chef's house watching it with him, and his roommate's girlfriend was recording us, I guess, behind. Yep. And we're just sitting there and we're both just yelling. And there's a certain point where I'm like, don't cheat, Quinn. Don't cheat. And Quinn goes under, and I think Nigel or somebody hits that three, and I'm just like, God, and just it's good stuff, though. It's good stuff. But there also is another clip in there where Tyus comes off a ball screen. I'm like, shoot it, Tyus. And he just onions, you know, and I'm like, So that one leaves a good flavor in the mouth. Didn't handle it well, though. Obo didn't.
No, I was well. I was reading some articles, and it's just so many of them were just filled with Bo Ryan quotes complaining about the officiating and all that. Even the Wikipedia page is filled with that. It annoyed me.
Yeah. Shouts to Sam Decker, though. I'm pretty sure he's like been on a podcast or somewhere. He was just like, nah, dude, those boys just took it to us. Like they just beat us. That was a good, it did feel kind of a little bit like destiny, though. But I will say that this win really kind of messed me up for a couple of years going forward in terms of my expectations for one and dones and like what we could do with a class full of one and dones, especially like 2017, you know. Not all one and dones created equal, I guess. But let's jump forward one more year. Another UNC game here, Duke at UNC in the Dome 2016. This is kind of the, you know, you always kind of get a year post title, right? When you lose a mass exodus, I'm just kind of like, all right, let's just see what happens, see what we can do. Have Grayson Allen coming back, having an incredible sophomore year. This is Luke Kennard's class. So he comes in with, who was all in Kennard's class? It was Luke. It was Chase Cheater.
Brandon Ingram.
B.I., yeah.
And there's one more. Derek Thornton.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So a little hit or miss there on that class, I reckon. But either way, again, this was the year that Carolina lost to Villanova in the championship game. I think this year's team is a much better team than the 17 team that did win it. Like this, like Bryce was ridiculous for them. And I think they out-rebounded us. Y'all might have the stat up there, but they out-rebounded us by like, I mean, it was
a lot.
Ugly. Not as bad
as the second game.
Yeah, and we could have kind of stayed in that for a little bit, but
well, the 2016 team had Marcus Page kind of doing his like thing towards the end of those games. You know, he was notorious for kind of coming alive at the end of games, hitting big shots.
Well, they had Barry, right? So they kind of moved him off ball a little bit, maybe. I don't know. I can't remember exactly.
Well, yeah, obviously Page hit that crazy double clutch shot in the championship
game.
That's
right. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Bryce Johnson was just a monster. Like, I think one of the best bigs Carolina's ever had, and probably a little bit underrated historically in terms of like Carolina's bigs.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that's just because he would dominate us, but I think in this game, he had like almost a 20-20 game.
Mm-hmm.
29 points, 19 rebounds.
Yeah. I think what I remember though is like we didn't have a single substitution like the last 8 or 10 minutes of the game or something. Because
Matt Jones
right?
was like, out of the game for like, Matt Jones played 9 minutes.
And Emil had already been hurt at this point, right? Because he would medical redshirt to come back in 17. Luke had been, you know, Luke was sensational as a sophomore. Freshman year was kind of rocky, right? Like he just couldn't find the range. He had it this game, though. I remember the one he hit in the corner specifically. Mm. I remember Allen kind of like they passed it back and forth, and then Allen shoots another one and hits it from the corner. I think the biggest play, though, is the one that gets remembered the most is just the stop, right? Derek just shuts Barry down and just kind of stuffs it on him. And you kind of get a little bit of the flashback to 98 with the Wojo run to K. Grayson kind of throws the ball up and sprints over there. That was really cool. Just another one where we just seemed to be able to exploit whatever Carolina was doing during that span. But
my favorite thing from that game is that scene that you just described as Grayson's running away, throwing the ball in the air. I had a still frame photo. You could see Rasheed Wallace in the background. As Grayson has his arms up, you know, celebrating, and Rasheed's just like the look of disgust on his face.
Mm.
Priceless.
Yeah, that's a good one. All right, I guess the last one that I had on this list, and one of my just favorite ones to rewatch, this one's still pretty fresh. And similar to one you were talking about earlier, Shu, this is one where I remember being in the game thread and just being like, nah, we're good. Like, we're good. I remember talking to David Becker, shouts to Beck. Just like, nah, we're all right. I don't know why, because I am usually like a ridiculous pessimistic person when it comes to sports, you know. I have a kind of written record on that, but for whatever reason, this game I had a good feeling about. So let's go Duke at Louisville 2019. Got Zion and company. Entered the game as a 7-point favorite. We were pretty dominant at this point. We're 21-2. This is kind of before things fell apart a little bit there. What was the spread? So Louisville's up, and shouts to DBP too. Y'all go check the video out. They have a great kind of like 7-minute video where you can watch this whole thing. Louisville's up 59-36 with just under 10 minutes left. Let's start there. Mm-hmm. What changed? I'll go to you first. What do you remember, like what flipped the switch?
I think just kind of being in that hole, we kind of played a lot looser, I would say, because Cam Reddish just started hitting threes from everywhere. The defense, shouts to Jordan Goldwire. I don't know if I've ever loved a kid that came in and I didn't think was ever going to really give us anything, and to see what he was able to do his last couple years, last 2 years on the squad. He was just a ball hound.
And Tyler Thornton would be like the two biggest overachievers in Duke history to me.
But this game, I just remember Goldwire, you know, we kind of started pressing him, and he was picking pockets and, you know, creating havoc, and we're playing passing lanes. We just turned it into chaos, and Louisville crumbled.
My
favorite thing is just watching Joey Baker tell them, we're doing this. Like,
yeah, we're doing this. Yeah.
In the comeback. Yeah, that's what I you know, look, I'm going to be honest with you. When we went down 23, I turned the TV off for a couple minutes. I definitely missed half of this comeback until you guys were blowing up my phone with text messages. And all right, I'll go turn it back on and see what's happening. But that was one of the first ones or only ones I've...
Well, because from there we start, we close it pretty quick, right? Like we start to close it, and then they jump, they kind of like push it back out, and then we just steamroll. road is that track with you? Like, that's what I was going to say, was the Jordan Goldwire, Trey Jones up top attack just completely rattled. I mean, because we had Zion and RJ waiting in the wings, just completely rattled them. Anything else that stood out to you in terms of just strategically?
I mean, yeah, to your point, Duke forced 9 turnovers in a 10-minute span. And this was a Louisville team who I believe I read averaged like 12 turnovers. So we almost forced them into their average within 10 minutes of the game. So yeah, just that intense pressure. That team was just such a good, you know, it kind of resembled the old K teams defensively, like the way K had always wanted to play, but just really wasn't able to in the one and done era, just because of the amount of communication that's required and all that. But just having that level of size and athleticism, Trey Zion trap was just deadly. Yep. You know, when the ball handler would come up the sideline there and they'd trap him like right at half court.
Yeah, that's my favorite play. And Shuff talks about that too, because Trey had a way of getting down to where the ball handler would have to turn. And if he turned his back at all, you would see Zion just run a 440 up there and just bloop. And then it's windmill.
And it was a dunk every time. Yeah,
exactly. And then it's windmill time.
The other thing is just Zion's just dominance. I mean, obviously that can't be overstated for the season. And you have to kind of like wonder what would have happened if he just stayed healthy all year. But I've written down here that, so Zion, I did not remember that Zion was in foul trouble, and he picked up his 4th foul with 12 minutes left in the game. But then somehow he plays the rest of the game playing pressure defense, has 11 points, 4 rebounds, 3 steals and a block in those 12 minutes, and doesn't commit another foul.
Yeah. And it's just bullying him on the offensive. Yep. Like, it's crazy to see 4 guys try to trap him in the middle, and he's just like, nope, I'm just going to scoop this on you. It was, I think my favorite part of this is like just the swagger that we had even the entire time, to where not only are we going to do this, but RJ is going to bounce pass through my legs behind me, and Cam's just going to catch and pull up. And like, that's Ned right there. Like it was deep just, range too. It was, yeah. That was something else, man. That team was so good. Like, just had some gaps and holes in the roster. Like if, you know, Gordy or Trey or somebody could have been a 35-40% shooter, maybe it would have been a different story, but, couldn't quite make it happen there. So that's the list that I'd kind of come up with. Obviously, that we probably did miss a few. There's probably some stuff out there that I'm sure people are wanting to talk about. But if we did, you know, shoot us an email, hit us up on Twitter, let us know what you think. Any of these that we've talked about, do you have just a rapid fire? Do you have a personal favorite or one that you find most impressive or something that you kind of just keep coming back to? Rolo, I'll go to you first.
Well, before I pick one, I did want to give a little bit of a shout out to the 2020 game against UNC at UNC. Just because that was essentially 2 comebacks in one. So I kind of thought that deserved a little mention too, just because that was might have been one of the most statistically improbable ones. But I don't think I'd list that one as my favorite, just because it was a frustrating game that Duke should have been up. And that always kind of taints it a little bit for me. Like if I feel, oh, Duke should have been winning this game easily, and they just came out and played terribly and then pulled something out of their ass in the last 2 minutes or whatever. So I think for that reason, I actually liked the 2012 game a lot, because Duke was the underdog and they played so well, only to see like Carolina just simply be the better team and then somehow manage to pull it out.
Yeah.
And then I guess the others would be like the big tournament games, obviously, because those have just such importance overall, like the Wisconsin game or UNLV or whatever. But for a regular season one, I think it's that 2012 game for me.
Chew. I remember watching that 2020 game at your house too, man. We were just sitting there pissed off the whole time, dude. That's what ruined it for us, Raul. It was like the comeback was great, but we were so mad for 39 minutes.
It was such a terrible performance.
Such a terrible performance. And I thought, I was like, if we let Cole Anthony and this 3-17 or whatever the hell they are, Carolina team beat us right now, I'm going to lose my shit.
Well, the reason I remembered that game was because
we had those ugly ass uniforms.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
earlier you were talking about UNC not playing stall ball. That is, that game is a classic example. Cole Anthony just driving into traffic with like 20 seconds left on the shot clock for no reason.
Yeah, I think for me, like Raul said, you know, not counting the like the Final Four games. I mean, obviously the UNLV game, I think, is the most significant one. But personal favorite that's not a Final Four would, it's got to be the Cole Fieldhouse, the Miracle Minute comeback. Again, the Maryland, and it's not like we had Maryland fans next door. I didn't know a lot of Maryland fans growing up. Actually, I don't think I knew any Maryland fans growing up, not until I got to college. But just the level of, like you kind of hinted at earlier, Josh, like the level that Maryland had played us at those couple years, they were really annoying. They were hateful fans towards us. To silence that crowd the way we did, that was, I remember that one, love that one.
Yeah, those are both really, it's hard for me to pick one. I feel like this is too recent, but I'm going to just, I keep going back to that Duke at Virginia game. You know, it was just a lot of fun. It's on the road. We handed in their first loss. We beat the number one ranked team. And maybe some of it's hindsight, knowing what you know now about that team, but they were just so fun to watch, just a special group. So I'll roll with the Duke at UVA 2015. It's always good to beat them.
The outcome of the season kind of colors things a little bit too, right?
It definitely
like,
does.
Like 2015, it's easier to like some of those games. Like I was thinking about how many comebacks the 2017 team had, like during their ACC tournament run. And as cool as that was at the time, the fact that that season was just such a disappointment overall, you know, just kind of struggling throughout the year to live up to their standards and then losing the second round. Yeah. It just doesn't carry the same weight because I just have kind of bad associations with that season overall.
I know. And that semifinal against Carolina in the ACC tournament that year is really fun too. That little spurt that we go on, you get Harry Giles getting the oop and everything. Like it was cool. Yeah.
The 17 team, that was the year that we lost like a lot of road games that year. But if you go back and look, I mean, I feel like, I mean, how many road games are you going to play in the ACC? You play, say, 18, so 9 road games. I feel like 7 or 8 of those were, like, ranked teams at that time. Like, it was a really brutal, like...
Well, we had the most quad one wins in the country and got a 2 seed in South Carolina playing South Carolina, you know, so...
There were some bad losses, though, too. Like, that NC State loss at home was one of the worst losses of that era.
Yeah, that was terrible. That was objectively terrible, but all right, well, you know, I think we'll end it there. Just kind of something fun. Again, shouts to the football squad. You know, if we miss anything, you know, hit us up at thedevilsdenpod@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter, thedevilsdenpod247. You can find us on the boards too. If you're into recruiting, want to check out the football board, see what's going on as the basketball season gets here, thedevilsden.com. Those guys are doing great work over there. So check them out. You know, in the meantime, rate, review, subscribe, nice comments, all that stuff. I think we're going to take maybe a little bit of a break here. So we might see some older pods run through the feed in the next few weeks. Probably going to try to get the John Shire one back out and the Mark Mitchell one as we look forward to the season. And then here in the next few weeks, we'll probably do a season preview and just kind of see what we're looking for, do some prediction stuff, do some stat game stuff. So, you know, enjoy the rest of your summers and keep the faces strong and the verb high. Good.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.